Hi guys, and welcome back to Tales from Wisteria Lane, the podcast where we give you a fair view of all things Desperate Housewives. I'm Joel.
I'm Billy Ray.
And today we will be discussing Season 7, Episode 4, The Thing That Counts Is What's Inside.
Lovely.
Yes. So after having a week off because I was unwell, we are back.
Yeah, and I tried to drag him to that microphone, but he just wasn't having it.
I couldn't talk. I could barely talk. I'd been working all day the Saturday. The Sunday meant that it was a 14-hour day on the Saturday. It wasn't possible.
Yeah.
So I will be doing the overview, which is why we could not record last week, and B will be giving us the trivia. So what do you have to get us started?
So this episode was written by Jason Ganzel and directed by David Grossman, and it first aired on the 17th of October 2010. So in this week, the number one song in the US was Just the Way You Are by Bruno Mars, and in the UK it was Forget You by CeeLo Green.
Okay.
When will this end?
I know.
It's like the Black Eyed Peas all over again.
Yeah, but with more bearable songs.
On Wednesday the 13th of October, the Copiapo mining accident in Chile came to a happy end as all three 33 miners arrived at the surface after surviving a record 69 days underground. So yeah, great news.
I know, great.
On Thursday the 14th of October, Mark Rutte, I'm not sure if that's how you pronounce it, was sworn in as Prime Minister of the Netherlands after his People's Party, the Freedom and Democracy Party, became the largest party in the House of Representatives in the 2010 elections.
Okay.
Try and say party more often in a sentence than that.
Party.
The title of this episode comes from a lyric in the song Ah, But Underneath from the Stephen Sondheim musical Follies.
Which has also coincidentally also been a title of an episode of Desperate Housewives.
On its original broadcast on ABC, the episode scored 12.669 million viewers and achieved a 3.9 rating in the adults 18 to 49 demographic. With the DVR rating, the episode is up to 1.8 million viewers, rising to a total of 14.5 million viewers, and it's up 0.5 in the adults 18 to 49 demographic, rising to a total of a 4.8 rating.
Okay.
So it did really well.
Oh, okay.
In this episode, Susan is terrified to discover a picture of her in lingerie appearing on a huge billboard as part of an advertising campaign for VaVaVaBroom.com. However, in order to have a photo big enough to be put on such a poster, you'd have to have a professional photo shoot of Susan, which would produce a very high-res image. There's no way you could blow up a picture of Susan's head this big without it looking terrible from webcam footage.
Susan would also need to actually agree to that in her contract, that they can use her image in this way, but we'll come to that.
We'll definitely get there. So, meaning she is needed to be a willing participant. Otherwise, it is simply impossible for the poster to have been made. On a side note, it's the rare pornographic website, albeit containing softcore material, that is allowed on advertising on billboards.
Yeah, well, I mean, it depends. I'm not sure if there's individual state laws in America. I'm not sure what the laws are for America. But in the UK, we can't just sort of start advertising Babe Station
on
billboards. Like, no. I don't know if you like people across the pond or around the world also have Babe Station, or if you have your own versions of Babe Station, but
they probably have their own versions.
Yeah.
And then in the scene where Lynette and Penny are coming in from grocery shopping, Paige is shown crying uncontrollably, but in the next shot, Paige is seen already asleep, but crying noises are still heard.
I thought that there was a shot. Was it at the beginning of this episode? I'm not sure. There's definitely been a shot where you can clearly see it's a doll, except for the shot that when Lynette gets thrown up on when we first meet Renee, and she's like, I've been blessed. And then the baby throws up on her. That's clearly a doll baby. You can clearly see that. But I swear there's another shot. And I think it was this episode earlier on this episode where you could definitely see that it was a doll and not a real baby.
Yeah, probably not as noticeable back in the day on smaller TVs.
Probably not. So yeah,
that's everything.
Yes. So previously on Desperate Housewives, Bree has found her new rival in Renee. Susan has found her groove with porn. Beth told Paul that she isn't ready to have sex with him yet, and Gabby decided to meet her biological daughter.
Susan's found her groove with porn.
Susan has found her groove with porn.
Excellent.
We'll start off with Lynette. So, Paige is driving Lynette insane. She won't stop crying, but she finally starts to go to sleep when she gets a call from the store telling her that she left her license there, but Penny then offers to watch the baby for her, which Lynette reluctantly agrees to. But Penny does make some good points.
She does. It's very sweet. Also, Lynette would rather let the ice cream in the bag melt than have Paige start crying again. And I just imagine that that's extremely relatable when you've only just gotten the baby to stop crying.
Probably. There's probably mothers all over, like all around the world, that really related to that moment where they're just like, shut up. Doesn't matter. I don't care.
Paige is like, there's ice cream. And that's like, let it melt.
So Lynette goes to the store, and when she returns, she's seen that Penny's done an amazing job. And so she leaves Penny with her some more so that she can go have a bath and just kind of relax and wash the day off.
Yeah, lovely.
But Lynette is like, is this the scene where Lynette goes, how would you feel if I go and take a bath to, you know, get some of this baby vomit out of my hair from yesterday?
Yeah, she is taking full advantage at this point already.
Right, it's literally only started happening and Lynette's already taking advantage. And so Lynette is later on popping by to see the girls, but she's not staying for poker as she isn't allowed around Gabby's with Penny anymore after an unfortunate sick incident. Penny then offers to take Paige for a couple of hours so Lynette can stay and play with her friends. And again, Lynette is reluctant, but gives in.
So she just leaves Penny with Paige while she goes away for hours?
A couple of hours, yeah.
I just can't condone this, even if she's only next door.
Yeah, I think it swings and roundabouts, you know, as long as Lynette's not going abroad for a week or whatever and leaving Penny to look after Paige that entire time, or, you know, it's not directly affecting Penny. I don't see it being a problem for a couple of hours whilst Lynette is across the street.
I think I'm just too neurotic. I would be like, if there are cameras and I can see it and I can hear it, and then I will know.
Yeah. In the next scene, Lynette hands Paige to Penny so that she can go for a run, telling her that she'll be back in about 20 minutes. Penny warns her mum that she's got a test at school, so she cannot miss the bus, and so Lynette promises that it won't happen, and then she heads off out.
Yeah, Penny is reluctant.
So whilst Lynette is out, she gets stopped by Bree, where she then tells Bree the beauty of offloading responsibility of her babies to the older children, which is not okay, especially at the detriment of another one of your children. Bree then tells Lynette she wants to have a chat, which we will discuss in Bree's story because it relates to Bree's directly. And so Lynette goes to Bree's house, knowing full well that Penny doesn't have very long.
I think she's forgotten.
So this is where I now start to have a problem.
Yeah.
Because it's now directly affecting Penny and Penny's personal life, her schooling. And even in this scene, Lynette says, it's only when you've had as many kids as I have that you realise the beauty of the older kids looking after the younger kids.
Yeah.
And I'm sorry, but that is no longer an acceptable form of parenting.
Yeah, we see this a lot in media. We've probably discussed it in this show, in this podcast already. Not that I can actually remember.
I
don't think that it's any child's or teenager's responsibility to look after the younger siblings.
No. Fortunately for me and B, we are the youngest of our respective siblings. So we were never put in a position where we had to take care of a younger sibling. Anyway, so Lynette gets home late, obviously, to find that Penny's left a note telling her that she went to school and Paige is now MIA. It turns out Penny took her to school. It really doesn't take long for us as an audience to know where Penny is or Paige is.
It's in the next shot. Stop breathing on my sister!
Stop breathing on my sister! Lynette rushes to Penny's school where all the women in the office are judging her and she is essentially sent to the principal's office where there's another kid already sat outside and he's like, you're in so much trouble.
Lynette is such a bad mum in this episode. She's being called out by the school principal and she doesn't even go to this school. She's not a student. She's being told off.
Yeah.
She's that bad?
She is that bad. Inside, Lynette has her baby back, ribs, and is trying to defend herself. She's trying to defend herself to the principal, who just doesn't care because as the principal, she already has 8 children she's raising, which is more than Lynette. Apparently, she's doing a bang-up job of it.
I did love that. You just don't know what it's like to be raising 5 children.
And then she shows the photo and she's like, 8.
8, wow.
Clearly, you're very competitive.
Right? This is a new low. Actually, no, it's not.
No, it's really not.
I'd love to say it's a new low and be sincere, but it's really not a new low for Lynette.
So even though Lynette says that she'll speak to Penny tonight and she'll sort it out, I still think that the principal's being a judgy bitch. Even Lynette calls her out on this. And Lynette's like, oh, give me a break. Who among us is a perfect mother? And then the principal turns this mug around that just says, world's best mom. And I'm like, fuck you. Anyone could get a mug like that. I could go literally down into our city centre, walk into any old shop and just buy a world's best mug, like mug for myself. Doesn't mean I am the world's best mum. Absolutely not.
No, that was just a comedic moment. I loved that. That was really funny.
Really aggravated me. I'm like, bitch, that means nothing. That means a mug means nothing.
Yeah, Michael Scott bought his own world's best boss one.
Exactly.
Like, world's best boss.
Exactly.
Bought that in wherever he said he got it.
Wilco. And I've got a mug at the office that says business bitch.
You do?
Yeah, you got it for me.
Oh, yeah.
I'm Kelly Kapoor. The business bitch.
Kelly Kapoor, business
Kelly
bitch.
Kelly Kapoor, business bitch. And although I am a business bitch, that mug doesn't mean I'm the business bitch.
Yes, it does. That's why I bought it.
At home, Lynette has a little chat with Penny, explaining that she didn't do anything wrong and it was actually all Lynette's fault, which is the first time we've heard Lynette say that in a long time.
And I love when parents apologise. You know this.
It's really nice to see. So she tells Penny that she has to stop helping out so much with the baby, but Penny says that she only did it because Lynette's less cranky when she has someone to help her, you know, like the dad.
This was a sweet scene, though, when she's like, I like you and you're nice, mummy.
Yeah.
We can have fun.
Lynette thanks her daughter and tells her that it's her job to take care of her. And then Tom overhears all of this in the other room. And so then she sends Penny off upstairs. And then she turns to Tom and she says that they need to get some help.
Getting a nanny is a good idea.
It is a good idea. And I hope they get Joe Frost. But haven't we already had them getting a nanny? We had a nanny in one of the earlier seasons.
I don't remember. I know Karen helped out a lot.
No, we definitely had a nanny in one of the earlier seasons.
Didn't Tom?
Which Tom, like Lynette got concerned that Tom was like having feelings for her. And then Tom said, no, he wasn't. And then Tom started to have feelings for her and then they fired her.
He also says, what if I help out more?
Which is absolute crap because that's not going to happen. And even Lynette's like, what a lovely hollow gesture.
Yeah, that did make me laugh because I was instantly thinking, oh, Tom, come on.
So moving on to Bree. Bree comes over to find out more about her date with Keith on Friday, but he doesn't want to tell her anything, but he's planning something that he is stoked about. From afar, Renee is spying on them both, confused about why Keith would want someone like Bree when he could have her. And then this is when Lynette tells Renee that Bree has always looked young and she was always able to get away with people thinking that her grandson was actually her son. And then Renee starts to hatch a bit of a devious plan now that she knows that Bree's a grandmother.
So Renee watches people from a distance like an absolute creep. Yeah. This is like her version of Susan watching things from a window.
Yeah, she does this, doesn't she? Because this is the second time we've seen her do it. We're only on episode 4. Which I don't blame her for, because Keith is hot.
Yeah, he is pretty hot.
Yeah, he's pretty hot.
Should we play the sting?
Yeah?
It's him. Oh, he's so sexy. Yes, sir.
Keith comes over to explain to Bree what the date is going to be, and he's super stoked and he's super excited to tell her that he's got her tickets to the Black Eyed Peas.
Yeah, we will never be rid of the Black Eyed Peas on this show.
To God. And he's like, oh my God, aren't you excited? Like, Black Eyed Peas, they're incredible. And he's like, you like their music, don't you? And in what world does Bree look like she's a fan of the Black Eyed Peas?
Right.
In what world does it look like Bree's busting out My Humps while she's making a batch of muffins?
Right. Even when they're not the top song of the week, they're somehow in the content of the podcast.
Yeah, I know. It is fucking irritating.
The Black Eyed Peas in this podcast will never end.
I just can't get away from them. I just can't bloody get away from them. Bree.
This is only the beginning.
Bree kind of... Oh, my God. Bree kind of acts like she's excited, but Keith can tell that there's just something wrong. So he believes that she's underwhelmed, but she tells him that, and I quote, I live to rock.
Yeah, rock.
She then goes to answer the door, and it's Danielle and Benjamin, who are apparently here all weekend.
Now, I think it's absolutely hilarious that Danielle shows up, and instead of calling him her grandson, she just calls him Danielle's son.
Oh, does she? Even like, I didn't register.
This is my Danielle's son.
Oh, this is.
Imagine being Danielle and having your mum basically say, Renee sent you here first class to annoy me as well.
Yeah, I know. What the fuck? How does that make you feel? That makes you feel, must make you feel awful.
I mean, it is Danielle, so yeah. It checks out. But seriously, that must have been quite disheartening.
So after interrupting Lynette's run, Bree invites her inside for coffee to discuss Renee, who's now apparently going out with Keith tomorrow night, which I think is actually quite shitty of Keith to do.
Why is he? He's got a severe case of man brain, doesn't he? Not only has he bought Bree tickets to see the Black Eyed Peas, which is just out of left field, but I'm pretty sure that most men would know that seeing these two women like this isn't a good idea.
No, when they live on the same street.
Yeah, and it's quite clear what's happening.
So apparently Keith called Bree to ask, but she couldn't exactly say no, which I guess is something Bree calls to ask, but what's the point of calling to ask when Bree isn't going to say no? She doesn't own you, she doesn't control you, you're not together.
Yeah, it's a bit weird.
So
a vivacious libido and unlimited funds, a deadly combination.
Lynette tells Bree that she has to fight back because that's the only language Renee understands. And then she gives her some advice, telling her that she freaks out watching The Wizard of Oz because she's frightened of little people.
Mm-hmm.
And then Lynette runs off to get home, basically. Well, they don't even really explain why Lynette is frightened. Not Lynette. Renee is frightened of little people. It's glossed over completely in a single line later in the episode.
I also loved when she said that she's too fond of her car to run her down. And I thought, since when? You've run over like 3 people this season already.
That's true, yes. Is this still the car with the heated seats and the little mini fridge in the back?
Yeah, the champagne cooler with champagne glasses.
At their date, Renee is introducing Keith to sushi. and he seems to be rather skeptical of it all. And then we hear a scuttling in the distance. It's going to be really hard to try and explain the scene.
It was a bit like something you'd see in, I don't know, Hereditary or something. Yeah. The scuttling.
We hear like a scuttling in the distance. Renee starts to freak out a bit before composing herself. And then she continues her conversation with Keith before she thinks she's seeing something again. And then this time she asks Keith if he sees anything and then screams before realizing that she's screaming at a child.
Yeah, that was hilarious.
She screams and she goes, oh, you're just a kid.
Now, she looks insane. She looks like a crazy person.
I feel really sorry for Keith.
Right? It's embarrassing.
It's really embarrassing. So this is when she starts to explain to Keith that when she was younger, there was an incident with a little person at the circus. And since then, she's been terrified. And then that's all we hear. We don't hear any more.
But either way, it's such a strange scene. Who would write this? Well, we do know who
would write
this.
We know who would write this.
We said it at the beginning of the podcast. Yeah. But it's very strange.
So after she sort of half explains to Keith what her problem is, this is when a little person pops up claiming that he knows her, and Renee then starts to scream, panic, hide behind Keith and climb the walls before she finally throws a jacket over him.
Yeah, oh, that poor guy.
That poor guy. Keith then apologizes on her behalf and like pulls the jacket off, and he's clearly mortified. And then the little person walks off to, I'm guessing, the other side of the restaurant, who are now staring and judging Renee.
Yeah, everyone's staring.
And then the guy goes to Bree, who's hiding away in her own little private booth because she's a rich bitch, to tell her that the deed is done and he was happy to help. And then Bree's like, I'll see you at church.
Well, we did warn you, Renee. Bree's a dangerous girl.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a dangerous girl.
She is. But this was a scene. So Renee pops by to visit Bree to scold her for having the audacity to exploit a traumatic childhood memory.
But how did she find out it was Bree?
I don't know.
They never explained that. It's not like the man would ever go up to her and be like, by the way, it was Bree.
So Keith then pulls up, and so Renee wants to just straight up ask him who he wants to be with, but Bree isn't comfortable with putting Keith on the spot like that. So Renee ignores Bree and goes to ask, but Bree then jumps in and asks something else instead, getting rid of Keith. And she then turns to Renee and tells her that she's afraid to lose and forfeits the fight because she can't stay up late like him, and she doesn't get his references, and she doesn't want to be laughed at and thought of as some predatory divorcer.
Mm.
Renee then tells her that people are just jealous because they choose to go after what they want still, and she decides to back down and let Bree have Keith. And they decide to be friends, not enemies, and then Bree leaves Renee alone in her house.
Yeah, she does. That was weird. But this is a nice moment with Renee here, sticking up for cougars everywhere.
Right? She's there like, do you know what? Everyone laughs and are jealous of us because we go for what we want still. We're not resigning ourselves to a dry, dusty life.
Exactly. They're like, we're a bit older and we're going for some younger, hot men, and we're getting them.
Yeah.
I don't see the problem.
No, what is the problem?
Good for you. Although I would rather they didn't make up so quickly because I was quite enjoying the frenemies thing.
Yeah.
But that's fine. We have more stories to come.
So Carlos and Gabby are walking in the park on their way to meet Juanita's biological parents and their biological daughter, with Gabby having a bit of a freak out about what she should say. We then meet Hector, who introduces himself to Gabby and Carlos, and he walks them over to his wife Carmen and their daughter Grace. And then from a distance, we see Grace doing her best sort of Gabby impersonation, and then Carlos knows that that's definitely their biological daughter.
Yes, he does.
Carmen seems to be a bit judgy of Gabby from the beginning, but she is rich, so do we blame Carmen?
I think she's looking at Gabby and she's being presumptuous based on her appearance, isn't she? And her manner.
And her manner, yeah. You know, Gabby is there at the table putting on lip gloss and like, so we don't really... And she's like, just she's being the rich bitch. And Carmen who's and Grace are clearly a family with limited finances.
Yeah, they are so, like pover humble roots.
Yeah. So for them to just be suddenly sitting across the table from these rich people that they've now got a tie to.
It could also be the dress. Gabby is wearing the ugliest effing dress I've ever seen in my life.
So both families are discussing what they feel is best, with them both agreeing to meet about once a month so they can get to know their biological daughters better. And this is when Grace comes over to ask for ice cream, which Carmen says no to. But then Gabby chimes in and gives her some money. And she's like, oh, it's hot. Let her have ice cream. Grace then asks about Juanita's purse, which Carmen tells her off for, is we don't talk about money. But Gabby isn't fazed and she kind of shuts down Carmen. And then Hector turns and tries to defuse the situation, let's say, by calling Gabby a good mother. And we have a clip.
You know, when I got pregnant, I didn't know how I would handle the whole motherhood thing.
Mom!
I think I turned out to be pretty good at it.
Mom!
What?
I need money for ice cream.
What is the magic word?
I don't know. Hurry. Now, come on. The truck's pulling away.
Please. The magic word is please.
Fine. Wine, please. What, we can't afford more than one scoop?
I'm sorry, what was I saying?
You were talking about what a good mother you are.
Oh, that was sassy.
It was really sassy. So great, great opening with Carmen. We've got some tension between the two. Oh my God, touch me right there.
Where did Juanita learn to read like that?
Where did she become... can't afford more than one scoop?
That was so sassy. Jesus.
I don't know. Hurry. Oh, what such a great little girl.
This scene kind of brings into question that argument of genetics and environment and
nature
what
versus nurture.
Yeah, what determines who we are quite a bit.
It really does, actually.
Because when you look at the way that Grace is, despite her upbringing and how she's exactly like Gabby.
In instances, because Grace does come over and she is polite. But then we also see Grace at the beginning of the episode where she's like, I can't wear that purse with these shoes. And she's like stamping around. So she has a bit of both Carmen and Gabby, I think.
Yeah, it's very nature versus nurture with nature kind of winning a lot.
Yeah. So at the poker game, Gabby brings Renee, Brie and Lynette a photo of Grace and she fills them in on everything that she's been keeping from them. Brie and Lynette seem gagged at the drama and news. And Renee says, well, don't look at me. Up until 10 minutes ago, I thought you were Juanita.
Yeah. Renee is only half listening at all times.
It's a real mood. Oh, I aspire to be her.
It's really sweet to see Gabby so excited with the ladies about her daughter.
Yeah.
And how she's got a daughter so similar to her.
Gabby believes that since meeting Grace, things have been great, and she considers them lucky that Hector and Carmen are so lovely. She tells the ladies that she really identifies with Grace and believes that Grace was Gabby at that age, being poor but knowing that she was destined for more. And then she announces to everyone that she's bought Grace her own little starter Chanel purse.
Mm.
And then Renee seems to chime in and pay attention, and she believes that this makes Gabby the best mother ever. So where's that principal? Someone give Gabby that damn mug.
Yeah, so Renee and Gabby are going to bond over things like this in the future. You can already see it.
Later on, Gabby goes to visit Carmen and Hector so that she could see Grace and give her the new purse. But apparently...
Yeah, she said she was in the neighbourhood.
Yeah.
This is the second or third time that Gabby's kind of stepping out of line here. Like, there are boundaries that you are crossing.
Yeah, and Carmen does call her out. Apparently there was an agreement to call first if they want to see the child, which Gabby hasn't done.
Yeah, because this is going to be an extremely emotional time for everyone. You can't just show up out of the blue like this.
No, you can't. Carmen then tells Gabby that Grace isn't home and is naturally quite hostile towards her. And so Gabby hands the gift to Carmen to pass on to Grace. But Carmen claims Grace has a purse that she's currently very happy with and she doesn't need some rich family to come along and save them. And she hands the purse back to Gabby and says goodbye before closing the door in her face.
Yeah, which I think is fair because it's kind of getting to that vibe where it's like, when does it end?
It's solidifying in the Sanchez's minds what rich people are like, in that rules are in place. We've agreed upon these set boundaries and you now believe that you're above these boundaries.
Mm.
And whether you realize that you're behaving this way, whether you genuinely believe that you are above these boundaries and it's because you've got money or not is one thing, which I don't believe Gabby is thinking. I don't necessarily think that Gabby's there like, I'm rich, I'll do what I want.
Well, that's the problem. Gabby's just not thinking.
She's not thinking. That's the thing. And so I think from Carmen's point of view, it's who do you think you are? I'm honoring the rules. You honor the rules as well. You're no better than me.
Yeah, it's all very touchy.
Yeah. So Carlos is having a go at Gabby for getting Grace an expensive purse when they aren't her parents, essentially siding with Carmen. But Gabby believes that she has a right to get Grace's stuff as Grace was supposed to have all of this anyway. And he warns Gabby not to scare or upset Carmen and Hector as they could take Grace away.
Yeah, he's like, you know, we're falling in love with her and this is what I was worried about.
Mm-hmm.
Because they could lose her at any moment. And this Gabby was already kind of losing it before she even met the girl.
Yeah, Gabby's really all over the place at the moment. This is why I have a bit of a problem with Carlos this season.
Yeah, he hasn't handled any of this that well.
He doesn't handle it very well. And Gabby's not handling it well either, but Gabby's clearly emotionally very volatile right now. And I don't think that Carlos takes that into consideration when he's communicating with Gabby about all of this.
Yeah, I didn't mention it in the last episode or the one before, but when Carlos is doing the things that he's doing and he's looking out for Juanita, it's all well and good, but don't forget that you do have a wife to look after as well here.
Yeah. So Gabby and Carlos have Grace and her family over and Carlos is hanging out with Hector and they have a nice little chat about how they're all really good friends and blah, blah, blah.
They're just having a great time being bros.
They really are. I like Carlos and Hector just sort of hanging out. They're like so blasé about the whole situation. Yeah. They're like, well, at least we got to meet. Cheers to that. Yeah.
Just two guys being dudes.
Like, yeah. Grace and Celia are playing and Carmen is teaching Juanita how to cook or bake or do something.
Yeah, they're having like their little motherly bonding sessions without the kids even realizing.
Yeah.
It's so sweet.
Grace then comes over to Gabby to compliment the house, and Gabby gives her a tour so that they can have their own little...
To get her alone.
Mother, daughter, get her alone moment, yeah.
Concerning.
It is. They get to Gabby's room and Grace sees the jewelry box, and Grace tells Gabby that she can't wait to grow up so she can have beautiful things. And so Gabby gives her a necklace, which is in the jewelry box. And Grace is hesitant as her mum may get mad, but Gabby tells her that it can be their secret. And they have like creepy music playing in the background. It just makes it seem like they're setting Gabby up to be some sort of groomer.
It's not great. The saying that you can have your own little secret, like the secret element of it. And again, she's really pushing boundaries, except this time she's really pushing them.
Yeah.
She's bulldozing them.
Oh, definitely. So that is Gabby's story. Setting it up, we've now met the Sanchezes. Love Carmen. She's a great addition.
If you don't want your heart broken, just get out now while the going's good.
Yeah, guys, I advise you to stop watching now if you don't like crying. Okay, moving on to Boozin. So Susan and Mike are celebrating paying off his truck loan and getting rid of some of their debt and finally being on their way up. Maxine then comes in to tell Susan that she needs to stop with the porn as she has some new investors and they want a huge US presence. And as Maxine has promised Susan that nobody in, you know, the US would see her, she's warning her to get out now.
Yeah, and I thought it was actually really nice of her to tell Susan about these changes and respect that boundary.
I thought it was really nice of her as well to just give her a bit of a heads up. I thought it was really respectful.
I wouldn't have expected it from Maxine. She seems nice on the outside, but she's so businessy and she's exploiting all these women in this block of flats that I just wouldn't have thought that she would do this.
Is she exploiting them?
Well, yeah, she knows they're in a bad way, so she's using them to make money. I do love, though, that she walks in and the first thing she says is how she would ride Mike if she were younger. Like, yeah, she's got no filter.
If I was younger, I would ride you like the hobo rides a boxcar.
Oh my God. Like, what a thing to say.
She comes over and she goes, like, look at this punim! Pulls on his cheeks.
God.
Love her so much. So Susan tells Maxine that she will work right up until the last day. And then we kind of get main character syndrome with Susan, as Maxine believes that she was and always will be the best softcore cleaning themed porn star to ever grace the overseas bronze screen.
A bit much.
And I'm just like, girl, she's been doing it for weeks.
All she's doing is dusting some tables and getting her cleavage out.
Right? And Maxine's like, no one will ever clean a table on the bronze porn screen like you, love. Like,
I don't know. I'm sure someone will come along.
It gave me real main character syndrome. You know, like, oh, she's the best of anything that she ever does.
Yeah, she's a Mary Sue. She's a Mary Susan.
That's the one.
She's a Mary Susan.
She is a Mary Susan. So what have we now got? A big overseas presence and Susan claiming that she will work right up until the last day, basically because she's getting such good pay from all of this that her and Mike are really actually starting to see some benefits from it.
Yeah, and it doesn't seem like a difficult job. Like, I wonder if I could sign up.
I could do it.
Like, you'd have to vacuum.
I vacuum. Okay. I don't actually have to vacuum. I just have to plug it in and move it around the floor a bit.
That's very true. You could even just have headphones on the whole time.
Exactly.
Listen to Taylor Swift to make your money.
Exactly. And I've got the boobs for it, so I could rub the table.
You do have lovely titties.
So, anyway. Susan is out driving when she notices that they're starting to put up a billboard for Vava Broom. I can't remember who she was talking to.
She was on the phone to someone.
Was it someone from the school?
Unimportant.
Or something. And she's just driving along talking to them and she's like, oh my God! She then notices that she is the poster girl. And in typical Susan fashion, she runs over there telling them to stop because, well, it's her, but they don't. So she grabs the poster strip as they're lifting it up and it rips and she falls to the ground. And in the distance, I'd say that it would hurt considering that she fell directly onto concrete.
Yeah. The problem is she hasn't really helped. All she's done is cut the poster below the neck. So her head is still
there. Her head is still on the poster. It's still there. And the dude that's putting it up is like, lady, with a body like that, no one's even going to notice you got a head.
You know, you just have to hope that he's right. But this is such a Susan story. The fact that there's a giant lingerie poster of Susan going up, like, that's so Susan.
Yeah.
We could play a game and I'd be like, so who does this story happen to? And anyone would be like, I bet that's a Susan story.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah. It's sort of like a terrible thing that's happening, but I was about to say sprinkle in some comedy, but this isn't sprinkled. This is, for Susan's storylines, it is always 1% awful, 99% comedy.
Yeah, like, it's traumatizing, and that's the joke.
So Susan is with Maxine, freaking out because she was told she had a month before this all went down. She begs Maxine to call whoever she needs to take down the billboards, to swap it out with some other girl, just anything. And she then panics because Mike will recognize the panties that she's wearing in the billboard because he gave them to her for their anniversary.
I don't think so.
Maxine agrees to make a call anyway.
Maxine's a liar. There's no way that she didn't sign off on this.
True, that's true. She would have seen the pictures.
The story's just bonkers.
It is. It's absolutely fucking wild. So Maxine is then explaining to Susan that her partners have agreed to change the billboards for $9,000 as they will not cover the cost themselves. So Susan starts to freak because it's essentially a huge step back. Maxine offers Susan another way for her to get that money by doing some more extreme stuff that she's shielded her from on the website. And so Susan is interested.
This is what I mean about her exploiting people. Yeah. I think this was on purpose.
Really?
100%. I think she did this on purpose. I think she's been trying to lure her into this and thinking of ways to do it.
No, I don't think that.
Well, then you have too much faith in humanity.
I just have faith in Maxine.
Why?
Because so far, Maxine has been nothing but nice to Susan. Like, she's done everything that Susan has asked her to do.
To get what she wants.
Susan didn't have to agree to doing this porn.
No, of course not. But she also didn't agree to be the face of the company.
No, she didn't agree to be the face of the company. But like I've said, Maxine's probably got zero power there.
Oh, I don't know.
Because she's not pumping any money into this company. It's all the silent partners.
I know. I just don't think that Maxine is any way innocent in this.
I don't think she's completely innocent. I don't think that Maxine is this criminal mastermind that's like the puppet master of the porn world. And she's manipulating everyone.
I never said that. I wouldn't call her a mastermind. All I'm saying is that she's a manipulator.
Where are we? However, it may be a bit too late for Susan to hide herself from this scandal, as someone is taking a nighttime stroll and has found Susan's face portion of the poster in a bin, of all places, which is rude, and they've taken it.
It's probably Paul Young.
It probably is Paul Young, but we don't know who it is. Anyway, so finally, our final story of the episode is Paul/Beth.
Neighbour of the season, Beth.
Yeah. So Beth is sleeping on the couch and it's apparently giving her a bad back. So Paul is happy for her to join him in bed, which she doesn't seem ready to do yet.
Yeah, this marriage is getting weirder and weirder. Now she's sort of sleeping on the sofa.
Yeah, I know. Get her an extra bed or an airbed or something, dude. So Lee then enters to congratulate Paul as the purchase went through and he now owns his old house, something which Beth had no idea he was doing.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
But you know what? If she's going to be, she needs to step up her game, because if she's going to be trying to gain the ladies' trust and Paul's trust for whatever her plan is, she needs to step it up, because failing big time here.
So Beth is now confused as to why Paul would want that house in particular, and she also doesn't really seem pleased that Paul won't discuss it with her any further, and he calls her out for being his wife in moments like this, but at night she won't be a wife to him, which really helping her to feel comfortable and ready to do you, aren't you, Paul?
That's such typical. That's such a man thing to say.
Yeah, I know. Oh, isn't it funny that you want to be my wife now, but you won't be my wife when I want sex?
Men will use that. They'll bring that up any time they don't get something that they want, or they're being called out. They're like, oh, well, you didn't shag me when I wanted it that one time.
It's ridiculous. Like, come think, just think about it. Like, honestly, all Beth wants for you is connection and honesty. And if you'd have told her that you were buying your house, maybe she'd have done you.
Yeah, because she gets a house out of it.
Because she gets a house out of it. Beth is getting ready for bed, and she can see the lights on at Mary Alice's house, you know, the one Paul's just bought. So she heads over and finds Paul in the front room, and he asks her to go home, but she just wants to understand why he would buy a house filled with so many bad memories.
It is pretty creepy that he's just standing there in this dark house, like,
with a lamp on the floor.
Like Dracula or something.
Yeah, I know. There is just one light source, and it's a lamp, which he's plugged into the wall, and he's put it on the floor because there's nothing to put the lamp on. Yeah. There's no table or anything.
It's creepy behaviour, my dude. It's creepy behaviour.
Paul tells Beth that he doesn't see bad memories, and he takes us on a brief walk down the young family lane before turning on Beth and telling her that he had a real marriage in this house.
Yeah, memories of the house and the Christmas, and the Christmas tree in the corner and stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah, do you also remember that time that the wife ended up dead in that room and the son ended up drugged up on a bed in that room? And
yeah.
What about those memories? But this is also a genuinely human moment with Paul, which we haven't had much of, and that is quite nice.
No, it was really nice to get to see Paul reminisce about his time prior to the season one, I guess, really. Because ever since season one, he's really just been that creepy, murderous neighbour.
Yeah, I wonder if he was always like that.
So Beth reassures Paul that their marriage is real, but it's hard for her when he keeps things, and, you know, that doesn't really help the situation. So he takes Beth's hand and he tells her that she is right.
Yeah, he's keeping secrets from her and she's keeping her body from him.
Yeah. So Paul then comes over to visit Karen, who really can't be asked and just wants him to kind of spit it out. So he asks her if she's willing to sell her home, which she declines. And then Paul gets dirty and warns her of her, you know, upcoming broken hip or inevitable stroke. And when that day comes, she'll no longer have the upper hand and someone will make a bad offer because they know she is desperate to sell the place. So he's kind of doing her a kindness.
This is the problem. In the last scene, we finally had a Paul Young human moment. And then in the very next scene, he goes over and starts harassing Karen McCluskey.
Yeah, I know. It's a really nice moment with Paul. And then the next scene is like, you know, you're going to have a stroke. Beth sees me. This is one of my favourite scenes, and it's literally the last one. Beth sees Mrs. McCluskey, who's doing very well, apparently, and she tells Beth to pass that message on to her husband. She's like, hi, Mrs. McCluskey, how are you? I'm doing really well, thank you. Sorry to disappoint.
Yeah. You know, Beth's not having a lot of luck with Karen.
She's really not. Beth's trying with Karen, and it's not Beth's fault.
No, it's not Beth's fault, but it's because through association, they don't really, Karen doesn't really like her.
Well, no. So she tells Beth to pass that on to Paul that she's doing well and then tell him to back off and to find another woman to manipulate. And that kind of leaves Beth a bit confused. And then later that day, she asks Paul how his day was and whether he spoke to anyone, but he doesn't tell Beth anything. And he doesn't really even seem to realise that Beth is clearly probing.
No, but can I also say he gets home and she says that she's making a stew. And she's cutting up green peppers. And what kind of stew has green peppers in it?
I don't know.
What is she doing?
I don't know. Green peppers are the worst of the peppers, by the way.
And she's putting that in a stew? It's like, well, she wants the marriage. Like, this marriage is a sham. He's got to get with someone else.
Paul leaves Beth alone and she can clearly tell he's hiding something from her. And then we end the episode with our little ending, which Mary Alice talks about purses and how they can hold anything. And we see Penny and Lynette looking after Paige together this time. Susan paying Maxie and the $9,000 to get rid of the billboards.
Mm-hmm.
Bree giving Renee a gift for some reason.
Yeah, I'm not sure. Maybe it's like a, we've just become friends.
Yeah.
Like, let's make up.
The others seem to connect with the respective storylines. This is just Bree giving Renee a gift randomly. And finally, Grace is putting away her new necklace with Gabby looking on behind her.
Yeah.
Ooh.
So let's move on to our next segment where Joel's going to give the gayest and the straightest moments. So what do you have for gayest moment?
My award for gayest moment. I don't really have one.
Would you let me play the sting ball then?
For fun. No, I was trying to see if I could at the last minute think of one. But I don't really have one.
And then what do you have for straightest moment?
So my award for straightest moment. To be fair, it could go to several people, but I am going to give it to Hector and Carlos for their little bro moment.
Yeah, where just they're like, two dudes being guys.
Yeah, they're like, oh, this is a horrid situation, but at least we're friends and can sit and drink beer now.
Yeah, bottled beer.
Yeah.
Hector is living it up.
He is living it up. Shit. He's like, shit, glass bottle beer? Fuck me. And Carmen's there like, wow, you don't have wine in a box? And now we move on to B's awards for best and worst parent. So who do you have for the best parent?
My award for...
best parent of the episode.
I gave this to the principal at Penny's school, and I couldn't argue it because she has a mug that proves it. How could I argue? That's got the evidence.
She's world's best mom. There we go. She is the winner of all of them.
I know. I was like, I want to give it to someone else, but I can't.
Okay, so who do you have for the worst parent?
So my award for...
worst parent of the episode.
It probably goes without saying, but I gave it to Lynette.
Yeah.
I mean, she even gets told off for being a bad parent by a school principal who has 8 children. And she doesn't even go to this school as a student. And she's being told off.
Yeah.
That was embarrassing.
I mean, you could argue that it could also go to Gabby, but I would say yes, Lynette.
Well, it might go to Gabby in the future, but there hasn't really been much consequence for her actions.
No, there hasn't been much consequence for her actions, but you can still tell it's bad parenting, whether there's consequence or not.
True, but Lynette's baby got taken on a bus without her.
Oh, God forbid the baby goes on a bus.
With a child? Getting breathed on.
Yeah, in the middle of a pandemic?
Yeah, so...
I mean, it's not, but...
Bravo, bravo, fucking bravo, everyone. Yeah. So that was season 7, episode 4, The Thing That Counts Is What's Inside. If anyone has any questions, queries, comments and theories, where can they find us?
You can find us on Instagram at boyfriendsreview.
And join us next time, or we'll be back in your ear holes with season 7, episode 5, Let Me Entertain You by Robbie Williams.
Ew.
Nah, it's probably not.
Yeah, probably not.
See you then.
Bye, guys.
Bye.